The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast, one of the host's favorite tight end is George Kittle. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I can't believe I got you to laugh. That's Dominique Foxworth.
That was a laugh of disappointment.
Dominique, the host of the Dominique Foxer Show, an excellent podcast. You can see him on Debatable, Get Up, everywhere, this podcast. Dominique, an excellent divisional round is now in the books. Incredible games, much to discuss. So naturally, it's time to rank quarterbacks.
This has been a week, man.
What is happening?
It's only, Tuesday when we're recording this, and already it feels like a week. I know what's happening. So I went on Get Up today, and obviously they tried to make me respond to Dan Orlovsky's scorching hot take that just was whatever. And like, as someone who's on TV, and I know how the Get Up meeting goes, it's like you feel pressure to make a definitive statement after every week of football. Yeah. I wanna defend Dan because it feels like not peeling back the onion.
You don't peel back. Yeah, I said that and it was like, wait a second.
I got the point. Open the kimono.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Which I never liked.
So which is why I thought it but wasn't gonna say it because I know that you don't like it. But
lift the curtain.
There you go. Lift the curtain, see what's happening back here. It's like I understand you wanna be able to say something definitive the morning after important big win, like a surprising win, and you want to find some way to elevate Joe Burrow. But the problem is Patrick Mahomes is out here, guys, and we can't get crazy. And like the way that he parsed it was so like he has to even find it funny now. Dan Orlovsky, that is, because he was like, I don't know if he's the like genesis of all of this conversation, but it feels
I actually wasn't. It feels like everywhere now. I'm seeing this today.
Oh, really?
I'll
leave Dan alone.
Even on First Take, one of the questions I got was like, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, whose legacy does it matter more for? And I was like, what? Like, Patrick Mahomes hasn't won a Super Bowl. What are we? And he's also going to be playing on one leg. So, anyways, that was a joke that then obviously has derailed this podcast a little. We're going to talk about the games. We're going to pick. No, I mean, it was me. I did it. We're going to do winners and woofs from each of the games. And we're going to. You do some winners. You do some woofs. I'll do some winners. I'll do some woofs. Because, you know, a lot of surprising stuff did happen. Let's work backwards and start with the Cowboys Niners game. Yeah. The Dak Prescott discourse, by the way, has been crazy this week. So let's go first with the winner. And it's actually overshadowed the Niners a little bit. So let's start with the San Francisco 49ers, who deserve our attention, who deserve a winner. Who was your winner from the San Francisco 49ers?
I feel like it was Fred Warner. I think that the story of the game was the defense, the best player on that defense. I guess you could argue is Nick Bosa, but in this particular game, and what we're walking around with, it was Warner. He had an interception. He had that incredible pass breakup, and it seemed like he is as fast as anyone in football. When the ball is moving, he gets to it so quickly. Like watching him out there, and when you talk about winners and wolves, I think about it as a perception standpoint and storyline standpoint, and I think that his like Q rating for average football fans went up this weekend more than anybody else's on that field.
Can you explain? So the thing that I think is so fascinating, other than the fact that he's like obviously can do literally everything, and the most glaring being him carrying CeeDee Lamb like 20 yards up seam after starting in the A-gap. I mean,
Sorry to cut you off. That reminded me of something that I saw a few weeks ago. I don't remember what game it was in, but I remember tweeting about it.
When he was the cover two corner.
Jeez, Louise, the
well,
man.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, though. Actually, like, so it's interesting because off ball linebacker for a while, in when we talked about the NFL, was being devalued. Especially with the explosion of the passing game, teams throwing deep more. Why do you think he's clearly the best in football? I don't think he's more dominant at his position, maybe, than any player at any position. Maybe that's a I don't know. I feel pretty.
I feel like the gap between him and other players is at his position is bigger. If we're we're comparing him to Bosa on his team, like Bosa is in a crowd of a bunch of great edge rushers. Fred Warner is the guy, and then there are a lot of good guys behind him, kind of like somebody named Patrick Mahomes.
I mean, you could say Trent Williams is close to that. I mean, Trent Williams and Fred Warner were probably my two easiest All-Pro votes.
Gosh.
Because, like, Nick Bosa, amazing, but to your point, Myles Garrett is right there, Micah Parsons is right there. So you're like, what order do I put these guys in? With those two players, there was no question for me. I didn't have to think, which is pretty remarkable. But I want to stick with the Warner thing. With that defense in particular, why is he so important to it? Like, what, how they play?
Yeah, that the CeeDee Lamb play is like the example. It's that ability to do unusual things. Because when you're a quarterback, and Dak Prescott is one of the better quarterbacks in the league at getting pre-snap reads, and like he's one of the smarter quarterbacks in the league. I'd say that his superpower, if you're giving quarterbacks superpowers, is like his ability to process. He's more Peyton Manning than most other quarterbacks. And not to say he's at that level, but generally he can look at a defense and have a good idea what you're going to do. And when you're watching, and I, like, haven't played it long enough, I can look on TV and realize when someone's doing a fake blitz because you look for a player showing that they're going to help, or when a team is doing something, whatever. Like, generally you have an idea if you're around football enough. But because of his intelligence, Fred Warner, that is, his intelligence and his athleticism, they push the line to the left, in part because that's where the blitz was showing from. And that, his ability to show up in the A-gap forces a slide, which then opens up the blitz from the other side that went unblocked. They only sent four guys on that play, but one came scot-free untouched. And the only reason why Fred Warner can show in the A-gap, the opposite A-gap, causing a slide of the line over there, is because his athleticism is absurd and his intelligence is absurd too. Because he's like, all right, I'm going to put myself in this spot. This will open up the blitz over there. The most important thing for me to do is to get to this seam route and take this away against the best threat that this other team has. And I'm a damn linebacker. And to do, like, in that one play, and that's just one example of it, but there's so many other examples of his intelligence, versatility, and athleticism allowing other people, and I'm sorry, I'll shut up in a second. But in general, I like to talk about defenses, and, like, the mindset is, like, who can handle more pressure in order to take pressure off of other people? And Fred Warner can do so many things well that it makes other jobs so much easier.
Well, that leads me to a take that I kind of want to run by you. So the San Francisco 49ers defense, incredible four-man rush, best linebacking group in the NFL, good players in the secondary, but not great players. I think, you know, as cornerback, we've talked about this, right? You know, you can attack them downfield. However, I was thinking watching them, because the four-man rush is so blistering, because they get off so quickly, do you think it's possible that it's actually more important that they're elite at linebacker than in the secondary? Because typically the way you counter that sort of pass rush is through certain run concepts, quick game, screens, but you can't do that against San Francisco, because if you try to get the ball out quickly, these linebackers are going to kill you because they're so damn fast. And I was watching them work together and thinking, like, oh, actually, like, this defense is built so well because there are just no easy answers.
Greenlaw dropped that pick six because he jumped on that stick route so quickly.
He's so good.
Yeah, and like, that's, I like where this take is headed. It's a good take. I think you're probably right. I'm hesitant.
This is painful for you. This is painful for you.
to take the attention away from the cornerbacks. But I think in this situation, and part of the reason why you're right is because they're the answers to a great four-man rush are quick passes and play action. So, like, play action, or like running game too. So, like, play action and stuff that'll slow down the rush. And play action, the best place, as you know, if you watch the 49ers, because they do it to other teams, the best place to exploit play action is that linebacker level. Because those guys are like conditioned to stop the run. If you have a linebacker who can stop the run and also respond well to play action, then the opponent is less likely to do that. Because and then they put you back in a situation where they're doing straight drop back, and then Armstead and Bosa and those guys can get off the ball and do what they do.
Okay, so that brings me, I think, pretty naturally to my woof. My woof is the entire Cowboys organization. So, you know, this is not a good Dak Prescott game. Bad interceptions, didn't play well. And then, you know, I think obviously it was just so many boneheaded errors at the end that you look to the coaches correctly, I think, when the whole operation falls apart. And it was the whole, like, just the lack of command of situational football ultimately does have to fall at the coach's feet. However, this is what I wanted to... So, you know, you could say Dak woof, Mike McCarthy woof, fair. But when I was watching them, I was thinking, man, I really underestimated how poorly this Dallas offense matches up with San Francisco in particular. All season long, we were talking about how this group of skill players in Dallas wasn't good enough. And that ultimately falls upon the Joneses, the original sin of the Zeke contract. You trade away Amari Cooper, who would have been so useful in this game. So you get here. And then CeeDee Lamb, who I think is a very good wide receiver, is your number one wide receiver. And I think he is the number one wide receiver. However, CeeDee Lamb cooks the middle of the field. San Francisco takes out the middle of the field. And after Lamb... The drop-off in this game at the skill position was... I mean, Dak averaged 9 yards per attempt throwing to Lamb, 3.7 to everyone else. Gallup, Schultz, who had the thing, at, you know, the mistake at the end, which was really bad. Pollard goes out, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah. Tony Pollard is their most dynamic second receiver. Like, so I guess that's why I want to say just... I want to kind of focus my woof on the Cowboys organization, because I think this game really stressed... that this team was not particularly well constructed.
Yeah, I don't know if this is fair of me to do, but I think I allowed myself to get caught up in the hype mid-season, because looking at this roster preseason, I thought this was like kind of a rebuild. Like once they moved on from Amari Cooper, it felt to me like, all right, well, we're reloading. Then this defense was incredible. They went on that run with Cooper Rush, and then we were like, oh, they're really contenders, which I guess the NFC is weak, which that's another story. Like, the NFC is weak. I don't know. I just don't feel like – I feel like my assessment of this team preseason has always been the right assessment, and I might have gotten drawn into believing something different. And it's just so frustrating to me, at least after this game, to listen to the responses to – the Cowboys, and also listen to the responses to the Bills, when it's like the Cowboys were underdogs in a game against a team that we all thought was better on the road and lost. That's fine. And lost a close game. And yes, Dak was terrible. He should have had 4 turnovers. He was bad. But it just seems weird to be responding to this in the way that we are when we're responding to the Bills in an entirely different way.
I think Dallas was bad. First of all, it's Dallas.
Yeah.
They're also bad in like ways that are easier, one, to point the finger at the quarterback, but also like for just fans to say, wow, look at this, you know, ass hattery at the end of the game. And like, look at me, like, and these interceptions. And whereas with the Bills, it was really a team loss. So this feels like a good point to go to that game. I'm going to go first because I have the winner. Mm-hmm. By far, the most surprising performance of the weekend. Bengals offensive line. I feel like that is the natural. And now, you know, that said, Joe Burrow makes them look better than they are because ball's coming out quick. He's making good decisions. I think the Bills pass rush being slowed down, perhaps, you know, partly by the elements, partly by the fact that ever since Von Miller got hurt, the 4-man rush wasn't very good. That helped as well. But even with those caveats, first of all, when Joe Burrow held the ball for over 2.5 seconds, so outside of quick game, he had 136.7 passer rating. He was well protected. When they ran the ball, and it was mostly man blocking, they were just pushing them North-South. I mean, the way they dominated at the line of scrimmage was shocking to me with the three backups on the offensive line. So I feel like I just have to give them credit for this game.
I'll throw Eli Apple in there as another winner, but you're absolutely right about that offensive line. And I think I don't know why a kid would want to play offensive line in the modern NFL, because like it's so much pass setting that it's not fun. Offensive linemen find it very fun to run block. That is the only thing about it that they enjoy. So it's like, and you saw it. They were having fun. And I think like this is the legitimate pushback against all like statistics and numbers and probability of like success rate. The legitimate pushback that I even have been hesitant to like accept is there something, a psychological boost that comes from running the football. There's also a rest component. I think Charlie on my podcast compared it in part to like giving your big man in basketball a couple shots, even though he's really just a rim protector. Like, yeah, you got to run a play for Gobert, and which is like run the ball for them. They don't want to be kick sliding all game long in the snow.
And you wear down the defense. And another thing, like, you know, the Bills not having Daquan Jones, I thought was one of those sneaky big, like, oh, wow, this is the thing, you know, you forget until it happens. But Dominique, in the run game, Joe Mixon averaged 2.6 yards before contact per carry. According to ESPN Stats and Info, that's the most he's averaged since 2019. I mean, and the way they ran the ball, like, I was thinking about the playoff run last year when it was almost entirely outside inside zone. You remember that game where they just spammed outside zone over and over and over and over? Mm-hmm. Now you watch this Bengals run game and this offensive line, and it's such a diverse set of run types of runs. Like I said, they were man blocking a ton and just pushing the Bills back. But you saw a lot of pullers. They're running power. They're running counter trap. Like they looked so complete, and it allowed them to string together very efficient drives and to just like bully the Bills, man. I mean, that they just bullied them.
And like, I don't think we give Zach Taylor a ton of credit as a coach, but I don't know who to give it credit for. Maybe it's the O-line coach. Maybe it's the offensive coordinator. I don't know, but Zach Taylor deserves something from this, like some sort of boost. Because one of the things, like the running plays, yes, I saw that. I appreciate that. A lot of people are talking about how well that offensive line played and how also they physically dominated them. But there was a big play in this game that I think is going to get forgotten. It was the Hunter Hurst. You remember when he hurdled someone on the sideline, kind of?
Hayden Hurst,
it wasn't the hurdle. Yeah, it wasn't the hurdle that was impressive. It was the play design. It was third and 10. They on previous third and longs. On previous third and longs, they had gotten blitzed. And in this particular third down, it was clear to me that Joe Burrow knew where he was going. He wasn't reading a defense. He knew where he was going, and what they did was keep Hurst keep him on the edge to pick up the blitz for a split second, check release, and by then Milano, who I think was probably the zone blitz defender who was supposed to cover him, had turned to help and take away the middle of the field. And it just seemed like, obviously, before halftime, they were like, all right, this is what's going to happen. It just felt so obvious to me that this was something that was installed, like, all right, this is going to be our answer the next time, and we're ready for it. And that's just like good in-game coaching that, like, that game's going to be forgotten, and sorry to keep going, but that was one of the pivotal times when I think the Bills had just scored, and if they had gotten a stop right there, they get the ball back, and they have a chance, and it's third and 10, they should get a stop, and they converted it. Like, that's a big pivotal play that seems so much about intelligence and not as much about just guys being better.
I think Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan do deserve also to be winners, to your point, because I talked about how they bullied the Bills, but they also put their players in positions to bully the Bills. I mean, on some of those runs, the way they were using motion and formation to get, you know, freaking Taron Johnson getting there was that one. It was I can't remember which of the offensive linemen had Taron Johnson in that, but there was one play where he just got totally drove into the ground. But it felt like they knew the Bills' defense was so predictable to them, and they were able to manipulate them to get the matchups they wanted over and over. So credit to them. And as far as the Bills, who's your woof?
Everyone except for Josh Allen, which is like surprising to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
so you're...
if I'm not necessarily agreeing with this general take, but it feels like we're leaving that game with everybody around Josh Allen failed him. It's like the conversation that I'm hearing, which I'm not sure is fair or accurate, but right, that's what we're saying. There's Stephon Diggs, and then there's nobody else. The O-line can't block for the running attack. Leslie Frazier was unprepared. They couldn't get a stop on defense. Like, these are the things we're talking about leaving this game. We're not talking about the shortcomings, which we normally do. Is like, we normally just focus on the quarterback. Like, this guy fell short again in the divisional round again. But that's not what we're doing with him, which I don't know. It's because maybe we accept that he's going to turn it over some, or I just don't get why it doesn't come down on him in the same way. And I'm not arguing that it should, but it feels like there's been no real discussion of him playing better, right?
So your woof is Josh Allen then? Like, this is your woof.
It's not my woof. Because I guess that's it's a sloppy woof. Because I'm not encouraging that. Because I do believe that there are other things to point to. I'm just pointing out that it's surprising to me. But I do think that they need improvements around Josh Allen. You need to be able to run the ball in this situation more than anything. Like, without him, like, you need to be able to push people back.
Everything I said about the Bengals dominating on offense applies to the defense, too. Just bullying the Bills in the trenches, both sides. I mean, that was the story of the game, right? Like, just in the trenches, the Bengals. The Bengals have, you know, good pass rushers, obviously. But, man, it was like all the little concerns we had about Buffalo towards the end of the season. Can they run the ball? Is this offensive line good enough? Is Josh Allen pushing the ball downfield too much? Do they have secondary receiving options outside of Stephon Diggs? Are they able to, like, use different personnel groupings to get matchups the way they used to? It, like, all came to a head in this game. And the result, I think, was a team that it felt like, obviously, they've been through so much this year on and off the field, injuries. It kind of, it felt like it all just got to be too much for them. I will say, thing about Josh Allen is he kind of was never the same after the elbow injury, in my opinion. Like, I forgot when he got that, but it was clear, like, there was something off about him throwing short after that. So hopefully he can get healthy. They can make some upgrades and get him back to the way he was playing.
If there's one thing for this team that you want to address first, is it the secondary receiver? Is it figuring out a running attack? Is it pass rushers or DBs? I guess there are lots of areas that need help.
There's a lot of areas. Yeah. I mean, they're assuming Von Miller will come back healthy. He's on a huge contract. Micah Hyde was ultimately, in this game in particular, by the way, you know, they were never really the same in a lot of things, but run defense in particular. For me, it's the offensive line. That was just such a problem at the end, and it was a problem for weeks before then. I kind of overlooked it a little bit, but they clearly need to upgrade there.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, that part of the answer is it depends on what's available and what they could get. But I also feel like I'm not sure if I truly believe this, but if you could choose something to address, it might be another receiving threat. Just like an idea of.
Yeah.
From a strategy standpoint, would you feel better going all in on allowing Josh Allen to air it out and making it so no one is safe? Or would you feel better about, you know what I mean? Like, if you get back to this game
exactly
next
what
year,
you mean. Yeah.
Would you like to have two number one receivers or one number one receiver in a rushing attack?
Yeah, it's a great question. This is like the age old, like, because ultimately they kind of stuck to their identity, which was like guns blazing, air it out, spread it out. But like, not only was the pass pro not good enough, they didn't have enough as skill player, to your point.
Right.
So it's kind of like, which one? I don't know, because it's kind of comes down to Allen and whether you can get, you know, improve some of his tendencies he showed at the end of the season, I think, frankly. So I don't know. I guess I still lean offensive line a little for, you know, just because I feel I would like to see this offense. They have to be able to run the ball in the playoffs better than they did. So, all right. Yeah. Let's come back and talk about the other games. With Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, every bet earns with Caesars Rewards. That means whether you win or lose, you're always earning towards perks like free stays at iconic Caesars properties, game tickets, dining, and more. And if you haven't started yet, here's a reminder. Your first bet is on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you get it all back as a free bet.
Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. No way to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW YORK or text HOPE-NEW YORK, 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Okay, speaking of teams that can run the ball well in the playoffs, Philadelphia Eagles. I'm actually not going to pick the run game or the offensive line for my winner, although
how dare
offensive
you.
Line against the San Francisco pass rush. I can't wait. I'm going to go with the run defense, Dominique, because that was everybody but you was concerned about it this season. This is your favorite thing to downplay.
I have a lot of favorite things to downplay. This is one of them.
The case for the Giants making this interesting was that they could run the ball on a Philadelphia run defense that struggled throughout the season, struggled at times to defend mobile quarterbacks. Perhaps that was a little bit overblown coming into this game. Now, obviously, game script made it so that the Giants really couldn't run the ball, it got so out of hand so quickly. However, before it got out of hand, and even when to a point, I was really impressed by the Eagles' run defense in this game, particularly because, they didn't do anything different. In the first half, they changed up a few things. They played more man coverage in the first half, which I liked, blitzed a little bit more. But for the most part, it was light boxes. Jordan Davis was out there some, but the defensive line was just bodying guys. Daniel Jones, in particular, as a runner, he had, 6 or 7 designed runs in this game. He ultimately went for 24 yards. On every single one of his designed runs, a member of the Eagles' defensive line blew it up, whether it was Cox on a zone read, Javon Hargrave chasing him down, Josh Sweat, you know, on the naked. Like, they were all so, they just overpowered them at the line of scrimmage. And look, next week's going to be a lot harder. But I think for the Eagles, that is something you feel good about, because that was really like the only question you had about this football team.
I mean, it's hard for me to reconcile my idea that they can't, that being able to shut down the run doesn't matter, with the fact that what we saw the Bengals do, like, really mattered. So I need to figure out a nice little nuance cool. nook that I can crawl into where I can hold on to both of these beliefs at the same time.
Especially with San Francisco coming down the pike, by the way. Your take is going to be in jeopardy.
It's a tough take to stand on. But the reason why I feel comfortable with that take is because it's the aggressive running game, or the impressive running game, is the reason why I think it's a problem, is because it opens up so many other things. And for the Eagles, it, even when people have success running the ball against them, it doesn't really open anything else up, in part because they do light box. And like, you run the ball against the light box because all they care about is eliminating the big play. So if they can also stop the run while not like loading the box, which the game script, as you mentioned, had something to do with it. But then that's like, then we're looking at all-time great defense level stuff there, which they can get to that level sometimes. The tough thing with Kyle Shanahan and this team is they have so many like runs in their playbook. It's like the Ravens with the number of like different run plays they have. And the, as much as we celebrate their passing game, like, their passing game is rarely all that sophisticated. It's like play action, simple reads. It's the running game that they build it all off of. So this week is a little bit different for them.
A little different. And you know, we can say like, oh, it doesn't matter, they're holding them to like 5 yards a carry, whatever. But that's with the Niners, it's like 8 yards a carry because of what they can do also after contact. So
yeah, exactly. It's like the issue with the Niners, why it's a problem, and part of it is because we've kind of like moved away from the playmaking running back as a model. And I know they just went up against Saquon, but they got ahead by a lot too soon. And Saquon had a big run late in the game. But giving Christian or Debo 5 yards is also opening you up to a big play threat, which is not normally in normal situations. In most teams that they play, it's like, all right, you got 4, you got 5. We'll stop you for 2 one time, but you're not going to get us for 20 or 30 because we're going to play this soft cover 4, cover 6 action. But against these guys, it's like, yeah, he might actually take one to the crib on your defense and get to the second level.
The one thing I do, like, I think, I mean, not to like spin this forward too much, I'll talk about this later in the week, but I do think they'll do, one thing that was kind of, they didn't sell out against the run, and they just stopped the run. Now, again, Giants, Niners, different planets in terms of their run games, but you can't sell out against the run against San Francisco.
Right.
Or you're the Seahawks. So, okay, I'm going to talk about that game a lot later, and I still have to think about it, and it's an amazing matchup. But the Giants season is over. Lot to build on. However, some woofs. What would be your choice as the biggest woof?
Well, first of all, I think we should dwell for a second longer on this was a success. No one expected them to win this game. In their heart, they probably didn't expect to win this game, realistically, if you hook them up to a lie detector test. Like, making the playoffs was one thing. Their Super Bowl was last week. they beat the Vikings. Good for them. But if you had to pick out wolves, like, you could throw a dart. You could throw a dart at the field, and it could land on just about anybody. the defense, I think, is the biggest issue right now, because I don't think we expected much from the offense. Just wanted them. You needed the defense to keep the game close to allow Daniel Jones and Saquon to wear them out. And they could not. And I don't know who to focus on because they didn't have an answer for anything. I guess it's that D-line that we're starting to believe in and starting to celebrate. And then they got mushed all over the field by possibly the best offensive line in football. And it sucked.
Dexter Lawrence went from taking over a game to having zero pressures, which it's not even about Dexter Lawrence, man. His Eagles offensive line is definitely the best in football. They're just in different weight classes. I guess one thing that, I mean, the Daniel Jones contract discourse is going to be crazy because it ultimately is not going to be just about Daniel Jones. It's going to be like, what do we pay quarterbacks? You know, yeah. Like what would he get in the free market? All this, it's complicated.
I was going to say, do you think we're getting closer to a place where a team will pass on a starting level quarterback? Because as you know, you have to pay top of the league money, even if your quarterback isn't top of the league.
They can franchise him. And I think
that's why I wasn't talking about Daniel Jones.
Yeah, right. Like that's why like they shouldn't overpay him. I mean, my feeling with Daniel Jones is what you want to see is, was this season the ceiling? Or if you improve a couple spots, which, you know, there's very clear spots, wide receiver, I think the offensive line, Terrier, yeah. You're hoping Evan Neal gets better. Linebackers, the other thing that's really was a huge issue at the end. Whatever. You want to see if like, okay, if I improve the team around him, can he get better again? And if he can't, what you saw this season, it's competent, but it's never going to be good enough. You know, I mean, so I think for them, like I would just try to buy time. I would consider having him play on the tag personally. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. They might do a 3-year type deal.
Yeah. I guess it all depends on what you have to pay him. If you could get him on 3 years, because the risky thing about going into the tag, the thing I never really liked about the tag is I don't like tagging players that you want to keep or that you're hoping you're going to keep, is because then you're like, you're working against yourself in some regards.
Yeah.
Whereas like, all right, you can sign him now or you can put him on the tag and then do everything possible to hope that he succeeds. And if Daniel Jones has a MVP level season next year, you're paying him top of the league money, which
you feel good about it though. I'd rather make that bet, and if I'm proven wrong, it's more expensive, but I'd rather him prove me wrong first. That's just how I just don't think it was enough for that long term. I mean, you know, they said he's going to be the quarterback next year. Yeah, of course he's going to be quarterback next year.
I mean, I guess,
you know,
it really depends on what he's willing to take. But if you could get him on 2 or 3 years for, I don't know, 30, 35, that's different than franchising him and then having to sign him for 5 years for 50 a year. That's all.
You're right. This is why it's hard to be a GM.
It is. One of many reasons.
But, you know, they've obviously got really, really good coaches, and we'll see what happens either with Mike Kafka, who's getting some looks at coach, and that would be a huge loss for them, I think. Even if, you know, I mean, Brian Daboll is a really good offensive coach, but I think Mike Kafka did a fantastic job this year. All right, Jags, Chiefs, let's wrap here. You go first. It's hard with the injury to pick a winner at Kansas City. You know,
Travis Kelce is an obvious winner out there. The way that he played this game, like there, I think also I remember the previous version of the Chiefs, and you had to put some thought into how you would approach this. Like, who's your number one thing to stop?
Yeah.
And now there's no thought around that, yet Travis Kelce still be eaten. And that's a real hard thing to do when you go from, because my personal belief, as you've heard me say plenty of times, is if you are going into a game and you have an option to take one player out, it's going to be that big play receiver threat. And so assuming other defensive coordinators think like that, then Travis Kelce has been living a good life for the past couple years when everyone's coming into the game like, we got to stop 10. Now everyone's coming into the game like, we got to stop 87. And he's still out here putting up numbers. We even saw when they came out of halftime, you could tell in the third quarter, the Jags started to put more people around Travis Kelce. Patrick Mahomes went elsewhere at the ball. It was ugly. And then eventually he just started throwing it into Travis again. And he's like, hey, it doesn't matter how many you put around him, he's going to make it work.
He's such a special player too. Like, his feel for zone, his ability to be on the other side of when plays are extended, finding ways to get open, his toughness after the catch. I mean, you know, it's Travis Kelce. He's not like Everyone knows he's the best tight end in the NFL. It's not a big deal to say that, but it was pretty dramatic in this game. I mean, he was so dominant, and, you know, dominant because he had to be. I mean, that was the other thing with Henny doing that drive, the 98-yard drive, and then Mahomes coming back in and playing on one foot. Travis Kelce had to be the best player on the football field. I do wonder, and this is something I'd like to hear your thoughts on, Mahomes being hurt, and he's going to play, but obviously we know his mobility will be limited. Do you feel like this iteration of the Chiefs is better suited to survive that, which is to say,
a Chiefs
offense that's less dependent on big plays, that runs the football better? I thought Isaiah Pacheco was excellent in this last game against decent Jags run defense, by the way. Do you feel like, okay, like maybe they're more likely, I think, to be able to move the ball than they were last year?
Yeah, I think we should give some love to that Chiefs offensive line too.
Yes.
Because they were pushing around a very good Jags defensive line and running the ball in a way that, like, we talk about Andy Reid's identity and identities of football teams. I think we have to appreciate that the Chiefs changed their identity.
Yeah.
And they are, by no means are they the Jim Brown Browns, but they are physical as hell on the offensive side of ball in a way that you would not ever say about an Andy Reid team. Or normally you don't say this about like a top ranked offense in the league. That's normally to air it out, but they were just
mauling. Got bruisers, man.
Yeah,
I mean, they maul Pacheco in particular,
they
too.
Maul,
also,
they
again,
bruise, they everything.
They maul, they do. What are some other?
I don't know. Rogue grade. Yeah.
They're nasty.
Nasty. Oh, old linemen are always nasty.
But you know, the receivers are strong. Like, you know, whether it's obviously Juju, Sky Moore, like MBS, they got guys who can block. They're the best 13 personnel team in the NFL. They are so good. They were so good in this Jags game running the ball out of 2 and 3 tight end sets. And then, of course, that sets up these huge chunk plays. There was that play, this was before Mahomes got hurt, where they were in 13 and Travis Kelce ran the underneath route and Noah Brown ran the deep over. And I watched that and thought, oh no.
Yeah.
If you're in 13 personnel and the explosive option is not Travis Kelce, that is a problem for opposing defenses.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of Kelce as a decoy is what I would be concerned about if I was anyone else, because I have no choice. And you know what I mean? It's like, we have to stop Kelce. And yeah, I'm not worried about, I don't know, Juju, like, single-handedly beating me. But, like, MVS can get behind me. But I'd be comfortable with, like, my corners in man coverage or just, like, not putting a bunch of attention on there. But it does, it just determines so much, because Travis can be, like, a reasonable in-line of the line tight end. And doubling there, like, I think puts so much stress on the outside. Or, like, squeezing your zone in tight there, like, puts so much pressure on your safeties in that zone between them. And the way that the 49ers play, it's just, I mean, Fred Warner, you got your job cut out for you, Fred Warner, because that's...
She gets there, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see
how the Bengals handle it. I've already skipped that and thinking about the Super Bowl. I was trying to think of, like, a player.
Disrespect. Yeah.
I was trying to think about a player in the league that I would feel comfortable just, like, saying, and it would have been Derwin James, but he gave Derwin the blues, too.
Von Bell? Can I interest you in a Von Bell, you know? can I interest you in a Lou Anarumo finding ways to make Patrick Mahomes' life?
It's really more the defense. Yeah, Von Bell is very good. He had his couple great plays last week, but
he did. Okay, so the flip side of that is my Jags loser, which is we all went into this game saying the same thing, which is this defense cannot stop tight ends. They are 32nd DVOA against tight ends, EPA per play, and it played out exactly that way. To our point, I mean, they simply could not stop Travis Kelce, no matter what they threw at him. And I think that's kind of, you know, the Jags have to get better at skill player. They're bringing Calvin Ridley, and that was an issue in this game too, with drops, and clearly didn't have enough talent outside. But defensively, it's a little concerning that they've invested so much at linebacker, and linebacker was still an issue for them. But I think the spine of that defense, you know, Rayshon Jenkins flashed some stuff, but clearly there are still holes on that side of the ball if we want to, you know, really take them seriously as contenders beyond just winning the AFC South.
And our D-line's got to be better. As I know the D-line.
Yeah, in this game, it was disappointing because they were so good.
Going forward, like, this team has invested a ton in the defensive line, and the defensive line has shown the ability to, like, influence the game more than any other group on their defense. So that's what it comes down to, is when you have that group, they have to be that group in big games. Mm. And no one walks around criticizing D linemen on a Monday after a big game, but it felt like that was the group that they needed. And they didn't. They got road graded, totally mauled, bruised. Just
smushed. Yeah, which was the case in week 10 as well, frankly. Yeah. You know, but you feel good because you got the quarterback and you got the coach. And both Trevor Lawrence ending on, I thought, a good performance, too. It makes you feel good as a Jags fan because obviously the most important thing.
Yeah, that interception on the end wasn't the best way to end the game, but I think like it was over by then. And it kind of felt like that red zone fumble was really what killed them, which wasn't Trevor's fault. And generally, he has something to build on, some encouragement. And they did some healing. I think that's what Doug Peterson told us, which I appreciate. Let them heal after being with
Doug
Urban. Yeah, Doug seems likable.
All right, Dominique, you're also very likable.
Only to you, honestly. Like, most people don't like me.
Yeah, some of the comments are like,
yeah,
he's kind of a heel.
Yeah, that's fine.
Only nice comments, please. I will. Only nice comments for you from me. I will see you next week.
Thanks, bud.